Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're in an exciting venue today because we're at the National Congress of American Indians. It is actually the month of October 2013, and we are in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this venue that many of you who are regular listeners have grown to appreciate is one where we interface with health leaders and tribal leaders throughout Indian country. Today is no exception. I'm sitting in the exhibit area with the chair of the Northwest Portland Area Health Board. That's Andy Joseph Jr. Andy, it's good to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
Andy, you are known to your friends as Badger, right?
Yes.
And that's a name that you've had since your years growing up, I understand.
Yes.
But you're especially well-known because of your role in Indian health issues. You have been chairing the Northwest Portland Area Health Board for some time, correct?
Yes.
From your perspective, looking at the Northwest and looking at the country, because I know you're on the executive board of the Nationwide Health Board, what kind of things do you see that are especially important as far as Indian health?
Well, I feel it's always been a trust responsibility for the federal government to make sure that we're provided health care. And to me, it's really important that we advocate for the funding because it comes through Congress. Now, IHS has never been fully funded, and it isn't their fault. It's actually Congress and Senate and the President's Office of Management and Budget, OMB. And, if IHS was fully funded, we probably wouldn't have so many health disparities.
I know this has been a huge issue in Indian country and beyond. A lot of people talking about these health disparities. From your perspective with the National Indian Health Board and the Portland area group, do you see some progress being made?
Under the current administration, we've seen some really big increases in our budget, and it was helping, save lives. For instance, our tribe, the Kaval tribe, was in a priority one status before, and since then we came out of priority one. That means life or limb. But with the current government shutdown and the sequestration, we're back into priority one again. So I just think that Congress and the people on the House really need to look at trying to save our people's lives and get out of the sequestration and move back into our plan for being fully funded.
I mean, this is a message, of course, that's pre-recorded, but people tuning in, when they realize that it's the middle of October of 2013, your comments are really striking a note here throughout this Congress. And it's striking a note with our listeners. Whenever this program is aired, people will say, look, we've got to be concerned about the funding priorities in Indian country because, like you mentioned, Badger, serious needs in many places in the country. In your own tribe, you're seeing that firsthand, aren't you?
Yes. When I was talking about, the big increases that we were getting and coming out of priority one, we moved into allowing IHS to do priority twos, and that was more preventive medicine practices that were saving lives. And, you know, when you're in priority one, our people aren't getting the preventive medicine that should be allowed and offered to any citizen in this great country that we live in.
As a physician myself and actually having a specialty in preventive medicine, I couldn't agree with you more, Badger, because what happens is many times the, as they put it, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And if you're so focused on putting out fires and taking care of the emergent things, like you said, the preventable cases of early stage breast cancer or heart disease risk factors or early diabetes don't get addressed. And then you see these people in the emergency rooms, in the hospital, with much more serious conditions.
Yeah. I myself, you know, went through a priority two procedure, and you know, it's something that I hope that all of our people will look at doing someday, and it is preventive medicine. You know, I'm hoping that the government will get back to allowing that. And I did a colonoscopy, you know, that it wasn't a pleasant thing to do, but if I'm going to be a true leader, then and I want my children, my sons and daughters, you know, future generations to you know, be able to live a good life, then they need to do these different things. I know the ladies need to do the mammograms and things like that. If we can detect things like cancer early, you know, it is treatable on most cases. I was fortunate my procedure went good, and I don't have any cancer, but you know, cancer's hitting our people really hard, and a lot of friends and relatives at home that do have cancer, and IHS needs to be able to have the funding to be able to send our people to get these screenings.
This is an important message, and you mentioned colonoscopy, Badger. Many of our listeners may be aware of this, but it's worth emphasizing. Colon cancer typically starts as a benign polyp. And so when they do that colon procedure, when they look in there with that scope, and of course they give you some medicine to make you kind of sleepy. I've had the colonoscopy done myself too, so we have that shared experience. And yeah, it's not something that we're signing up for fun, but it's tolerable. I mean, it wasn't the best day of my life, but it's valuable because if you've got one of these early polyps, they can just take it out with the scope. You don't need any big surgery or anything, and you're back home. You never have the cancer. So I really appreciate your example. That's a powerful example in Indian country.
Oh, you know, I kind of put it off. I didn't really want to do it, but I talked to one of my elders from my community, and he told me, you do it, because if they might find a polyp in there and they can take care of it. He says, you do that. So that was all I really needed to hear, was, you know, from an elder telling me, you know, to go ahead and do that.
No, that's great. And to me, I appreciate when I see tribal leaders who are really setting an example and saying, you know, I don't really like the idea of this particularly either. And it's the same for the ladies. I mean, the pap smears, the pelvic exams, the mammograms, these aren't particularly pleasant procedures. But you're exactly right. When people have those on a regular basis, it can save hundreds, thousands of lives throughout Indian country. So, Badger, I just appreciate you bringing that message to our listeners in today's show. Other things from your perspective as you sit on the various health boards, whether it's in the Northwest or whether we're talking about the national board?
Well, there's a lot of things to health, and our tribes have had you know, a lot of, you know, the answers right in front of them. For instance, for diabetes, we never had diabetes in our country a long time ago. our tribes gathered our traditional foods and medicines, and there were no additives or preservatives in any of the food. It was also a lot of work, and you had to travel a long ways, and a lot of times it was on foot, so our people got the exercise they needed every day to just to survive, because our culture was a big part of survival and following the different seasons and the foods and the medicines that grow out there naturally. So I would really want to promote our traditional culture and our traditional upbringing also. You know, there's a lot of suicides and people, you know, harming their bodies with alcohol and drugs. But we never had that in our way of life a long time ago. And if we can get back to our traditional ways of living, going in the, you know, sweat house and being mentored by our elders, we wouldn't have so many of the health disparities that we have right now.
This is such an important message, and I hear it throughout Indian country, Badger. I'm fascinated as a physician because we actually have records that go back over 100 years, and throughout Indian country, it seems just as you said, with people living close to the land, being physically active, eating a lot of healthy plant-based products, there really seems to be no evidence of diabetes before European contact on this whole continent. So I hear your message, and as we see such huge rates of diabetes, and like you mentioned, hopelessness, depression, these traditional values are exactly what's needed. Is that a strong push with the Portland Area Health Board?
We're going in that direction. My tribe is really, the Kabul tribe is going to be pushing really hard on our traditional and cultural values in every area, you know, for our language and you know, it's proven that if you know more than one language, that your educational standards will be higher and you know, it's also proven that the more educated that you are, the longer you'll live and you'll also be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So we're moving into language, and a big part of language is learning your culture and the different seasons of the year and the foods that you follow. You know, when our young people learn these things, then they'll be able to pass those on to their children and future generations.
Well, powerful messages. Badger, we've got to slip away for a break, but thank you so much for sharing what's been happening with the Northwest Portland Area Health Board, your own perspectives, your own leadership, and really calling us back to Indigenous First Nation values. Thanks so much.
You know, the MOU with IHS and the VA is a good thing also for our veterans. So, you know, I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak with anyone that will listen and pray and hope that all of our young people will come back home and learn from your elders, whatever they can. And if you got a chance to do a normal physical, try to find out if, you know, there's anything wrong with your health. The sooner the better. You got to live for your people and your own family and do that.
Very powerful. Thanks so much, Badger. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule here at NCAI.
White Limlim, thank you.
We have got to slip away here shortly, and before we do, I want to remind you that American Indian Living, although we're broadcasting from the venue, at least recording in the venue of the National Congress of American Indians 2013 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we would love to include you and things that you're doing at your tribal level on our program. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're at NCAI 2013. We will be back with more. Don't you go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Wimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Wimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Wimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Wimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it's got government full of people and full of people. Full of people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Well, I've got our next guest who's joining us here in our virtual studio in the Convention Center at the National Congress of American Indians 2013. And it is someone I think you're going to be very happy that we've got in the studio. It's Martha Ludlow Martinez. Martha comes to us from the Southwest. She's Ankh Akmil Atham. Am I doing pretty well with
yes,
that?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So tell us, you're here and you've got a beautiful sash that says Miss Salt River. Tell us about what position you're in for the next year.
So currently I've been crowned as Miss Salt River on June 15th. And what Miss Salt River is, she's really an ambassador on behalf of the community. So she'll travel to all across Arizona to different tribes that are within Arizona. And as well, I mean, here in NCAI, it's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we also travel to different conferences. The last one I went to was WeWin, actually in Las Vegas. It's a women's conference. And so we go to all these different conferences to try to get a better background about what's going on within different communities, not just where I'm from, but all communities, because virtually what happens to other communities could be affecting us, especially in Arizona.
Well, that's tremendous. And I know for many Native young people, you've been an inspiration already.
I really try to be, stay as active as I can. I mean, when you're a title holder, any kind of tribal royalty, it's really up to you to get out there and extend your hand to your community and to other communities, because, like I said, you're an ambassador on behalf of the community. So you want to project the best image that you can and be as involved so you can have as much knowledge, because when the year's over, you want something to have from it, knowledge and experience gathered from that whole year around.
Now, there's a lot of young people that listen to the show throughout Indian country. And some of them might be saying, well, I could never be a Miss Salt River or a Miss anything. I could never be part of tribal royalty. Did you always think, growing up as a young person, this is something you wanted to do?
No. Growing up, I was a huge tomboy. I was really shy, very, very quiet. I didn't really like to be in the public. When I first ran for Miss Salt River, I believe back in 2008, it was something just to try to see what the experience would be like. And it really was nothing I have ever imagined. And I really learned a lot. And I just have this hunger to feed for knowledge. And so when I ran, it was quite an adjustment. It was a little uncomfortable because it was out of my zone mm-hmm. of what I was so used to. But along the way, I had learned to become more of a woman. I had learned a lot of things about my culture and my community, and especially going out and meeting new people, how to be social and how to communicate, even not just with Native Americans in general, but all people. And I really never expected to be here where I am today. It wasn't easy. I ran for Miss Salt River, believe, 3 times before, and this is my 4th time I ran. So to me, it was just that persistence that I really wanted to be Miss Salt River. And after learning I had family members that were a former Miss Salt River, I really wanted to be an ambassador to the community. I also ran for Miss Indian Arizona, and that helped me grow tremendously. I learned so much. And so when I went back this past year to run, I was really prepared to be represented in my community. And I love telling people who I am, that, saying my introduction in my language and in both languages, since we come from a community with 2 tribes, and just telling them who I am and where I come from, because I feel that's a really huge aspect of who you are, especially growing up as young adults to be future leaders. That's a key point in understanding where you want to be.
Well, we sometimes do things on this show about tribal language. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have people throughout Indian country that listen, so any one language is not going to be understandable to the whole cross-section of tribes. But I always think it's appropriate to share a little something if you're comfortable. Do you want to share your introduction in your language?
Yeah, I have no problem. So the first introduction I'm going to do is actually Antham. And Antham, that's usually the first one that I start with because that's what I am and I'm most comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So how I would introduce myself would be Skuksiardik, Anianap Chugik Martha Ludlum Martinez, Chatrai and Widget Hook Ang Akarmel, Anianap Gol Kovaik Aidak, Anianap Ang Akarmel Atam, Hanjua At Kathy Ludlow, Han Ogs At Timoteo Martinez, Hanara At Ruth Ludlow, Hanbaba At Maurice Ludlow Butt, Hungaga'a'a Ampara Garcia Unwash got Antonio Martinez Butt. So what I said was, good morning. My name is Martha Ludlow Martinez. I am the current reigning Miss Salt River. I'm 23 years old from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community. My mother is Kathy Ludlow. My father is Timoteo Martinez. My maternal grandmother is Ruth Ludlow. My paternal grandfather is Maurice Ludlow. And Butt means that they've passed on. Mm. My paternal grandparents are Amparo Garcia and the late Antonio Martinez. And so that's like a pretty extended one. But our other language is Pipash, Hashidom Pipash. And it's really simple. It would say Kamdush, Kamdun, Anyan, Kamdun, Niyumiwahotk, Nya Marti Mulyek, Nya Ladlo Martinez Family Command. And that just says, you know, how are you? It's really good to see you. My name's Martha, and I come from the Ludlow Martinez family. Just another way to say your last name.
So now, did you grow up speaking both of those indigenous languages?
No. I it's just something really recent. Since I ran, that's when I started to get more involved with my culture. But it's not something I grew up with. I wasn't heavy in the culture. Mm-hmm. But now I am. I'm now more because of just running for these pageants. It really is an experience and helps you get involved with your culture to be more proud of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Tremendous. So one of the messages I hear you sharing, even though you haven't actually said it in these words, Martha, is you would really encourage this experience for any young lady in Indian country.
Yes. My actual platform is cultural identity. So in our community, we have a platform that you're going to advocate for or you're going to support throughout the year. So mine's cultural identity. Mm. And I think, especially in these pageants, they could go either way. You know, even if you don't get it and you get an attendant spot. I mean, I've been an attendant 4 times before. Mm-hmm. But just that experience itself, getting out there, it really is something. I learned a lot, and I could say I wouldn't be here today without the experience that I've had because of these titles. The things that I've honed in on, or being as proud as I am of my culture, wouldn't have happened if I didn't run for these pageants. And to me, culture is a huge part of who I am and mm-hmm. who I want to be. And I always think of what we call our huhugam. It's people who've passed on. Mm-hmm. You want to make them proud because they've made all those sacrifices for us today. Mm-hmm. And our community is very, very, very blessed in what we have and what we do have and what we can provide for our community. And you really get to see all of that being a title holder. No matter where you come from, what tribe, you may not be from Salt River, but in wherever state you come from, whatever tribe you come from, you really do learn a lot. And you get exposed to so many wonderful people out there.
Now, you're really educating me, too, because I've been to your part of the country before. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the trips that I was in Arizona and visiting with some of the National Institute of Health mm-hmm. researchers there, as well as actually one of my patients who's from, you know, your tribe, who had gone to a clinic I was working at the time in Oklahoma. But one of the things that was interesting to me in the terminology you just used, Martha, is I understood that some of the ancestral people in Arizona are sometimes referred to as the Ho'okam. Am I?
Yes.
And that actually means something, though. Is that right in your language?
The Ho'okam is actually an archaeological term they uh-huh. use for the people that's passed on.
Okay.
But in our language, it's Huhugam. And that means just basically the people who've passed on, because usually in our culture, it's very rude or like, not really something you should be doing, like naming people who've passed on to, you know, some people wait 4 years, or within those 4 years you have to memorialize them, because it's like when you say their name and you keep saying it, it's like calling them back.
Uh-huh.
So we refer to our people who've passed on in Otham, saying Huhugam, just in general, all the people who've passed on before you.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it means.
That's interesting. How about this question, Martha, and maybe you've heard it before, mm-hmm. but many people are asking, and they're saying, in fact, that one of the keys to health in Indian country is helping people get more connected with their roots,
mm-hmm.
Having a stronger sense of cultural identity. Have you either seen that in your own experience or as you've interfaced with other people?
Yes, I have. I'm an intern actually at our cultural resources department, and within that they have a farming kind of like department that they have, and so they go out and help people grow their own farms, like help them start it. And what we've learned is that we were people who weren't, you know, we weren't huge on meat or anything like that. We lived off the land, and we eat a lot of beans, a lot of squash, a lot of wild spinach, different things. And a lot of different communities that I've talked to, it's the same way. They lived off the land and off what they had, and they were very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Our community is one of the highest communities that have a high rate for diabetes.
Right.
And so we're really, really trying to push a lot of these different things to help the diet of our community members uh-huh. to be better than what it is, because diabetes is huge and it's hereditary. And so I've learned through some of the experience that I've had and talking with certain people, really going back to traditional foods and finding that culture, really helps you to keep your health up, because you couldn't go to the store and buy it. You had mm-hmm. to farm it yourself. And so even that helps with exercise and getting
right.
outside. So going back to traditional games and traditional food and traditional activities really do help health-wise.
Tremendous message. Unfortunately, this segment has gone by all too quickly. You're such an inspiration, Martha.
Well, thank you so much.
Martha Ludlow Martinez, she's the reigning Miss Salt River. It was so good to have you with us in the virtual studio here at NCAI.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It really was an honor and a privilege to come talk with you today.
Well, we've got to slip away. We've got some other great guests that are coming up. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be back with more. Don't you go away.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We are here at the National Congress of American Indians. It is 2013, the month of October, and we are in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've got a great opportunity to speak with people who are leading the way throughout Indian country. Our guest in this segment is no exception, Brian Cladisby. He's Swinomish Indian Tribal Community Chair.
Well, it's my honor to be here with you, Doctor.
Brian, although this is a pre-recorded show, the environment here is really energized at NCAI because they are electing a president this year. You are one of the candidates for president.
Yes, that's correct. I am one of four candidates for president of National Congress of American Indians, and the election will be Thursday morning, 2 days from now.
So even though it's 2 days from now, once this airs, it will be history. So people will either be listening to the next NCAI president or...
Or still the chairman of Swinomish.
Yeah, so we're glad, though, for your role of leadership in Indian country. And I know, Brian, you've got a special interest in health, and we like to feature things especially of health interest. Tell us a little bit about your perspective as a tribal chairperson when it comes to the health of your people and the health of people throughout Indian country.
When it comes to the health of our people, we have to understand that most of the diseases that we are plagued with now in Indian country, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, all of those things, strokes, all those things are 100% preventable. And it all goes back to your diet, what you put in your body. And so... it is important for us and as leaders to try to make our people aware of how important diet is to them. And the amount of money that we spend on health care can be dramatically reduced if our people could just fully grasp and understand the concept of healthy living.
This is such a powerful message. I'm a preventive medicine specialist as well as an internal medicine specialist, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's great when there are people in tribal leadership that are sounding that message. Proper diet, where does exercise come in?
We have created a fitness program at Swinomish, and over the years we've lost hundreds if not thousands of pounds mm-hmm. of weight. We have some amazing success stories at Swinomish where people have grasp the understanding of diet plus exercise mm-hmm. and they are wonderful role models in our community. Mm-hmm. When you see a person that has lost half their body weight, it is just amazing. I mean, it is just amazing for them. They're great witnesses to the positive effects, and it's a ripple effect in our community. When people see this, they want that too. And if you talk to anybody that is overweight or obese, the first thing that they would tell you is, I'd love to lose weight.
Right.
And
right.
So it is our job to be able to give them the tools that they need to be able to accomplish that. And the keys are diet and exercise.
One of the other things that often comes into the equation when we speak about indigenous practices and native health has to do with cultural identity. Has to do with, we talk about the broad area of stress management. Is this something that you're seeing is of relevance to your people?
When it comes to stress management, you got to understand in the last 100 years, our culture has been under what is the government deemed the assimilation policy. about 100 years ago, they wanted to basically create white men out of Indians. And their policy was, kill the Indian, save the man. And so in the last 100 years, we've incorporated a lot of the Anglo-European ways of life, and that includes diet and all the other things that have been introduced into our culture. So when it comes to stress, you know, we have high alcoholism rates, high drug addiction rates, and high poverty rates. And when you have those factors in your community, it creates enormous stress on the whole community. And Lord willing, we will continue to see tribal members breaking those cycles, and we are seeing that at Swinomish right now, where we have more and more parents standing up and saying that I'm raising my children in a drug and alcohol-free environment. And there's still a lot of stress issues, but when you have those components involved, it just makes it a lot more difficult to manage.
You, just looking at you, of course, it's a radio show. I mean, you look like a fairly healthy guy. Have you always grown up with good, solid health values?
No. No, definitely not. I incorporated a lot of my my healthy living style in my late 20s. And so I became a Seventh-day Adventist, and I was baptized in 1988, and just start slowly incorporating the health messages that we learned about. And right now we're at the point where the only meat that we put in our body is salmon.
Okay.
And we're just, we did away with the all meats, beef, turkey, pork, all those chicken. We just eliminated that from our diet and just pretty much mainly salmon and venison. Yes, I am going to be, of course, the audience can't see me now, I am going to be an elder this year. I will be turning 55 years old, and I can still get down on the floor and give you 55 push-ups.
Oh, really?
Right
now. Okay, well, you can keep that up until you're 65 and 70.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's tremendous. Definitely. But it's great even at 55. Let me ask you this, Brian, as we're speaking about these health issues and your own personal experience. You made changes. Your family made changes. Did you see immediate differences in your own life?
Definitely, definitely. You just feel better. You feel healthier. We incorporated juicing into our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. We actually did a 10-day juicing program. I had this rash on my leg. It was just irritating itch, and no creams could help. And it's amazing that after 10 days of juicing, it disappeared, and today it's still gone.
Tremendous.
And we still juice every week, but not as, not like we did when we first started a couple of years ago.
So kind of a fasting or cleansing program.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly how we do our fasting and cleansing. With we try to get at least 5 days in now because it's pretty hard to. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, is this something that's kind of more of a contemporary interest, or if you look back at your tribal traditions, was juicing ever something that that your ancestors did in the Northwest?
That's a great question. Our traditional diet was basically from the sea. Our saying was, when the tide's out, the table is set. We live on an island up there in the Northwest, and we are salmon people. So our diet consisted of salmon pretty much every day of the year because, 150 years ago, salmon was plentiful in that it ran in front of our community, our village, 365 days out of the year.
Wow.
So there wasn't a day that didn't go by where we had either steelhead or salmon. In the spring and the summertime, the berries would come, the camas root would come, and so we would, really, really enjoy those sugar highs when those berries ripened and when the camas root came out. But pretty much a very, very, I guess you would call today an Atkins diet, where a lot of protein from the sea is what we consisted of.
Yeah, and of course the difference with the conventional Atkins diet today is the fish fat tends to be an anti-inflammatory fat, whereas the animal fats that you yourself are, avoiding, tend to be the opposite, tend to make inflammation and diabetes and other things worse.
I was in Alaska at the Alaska Forum on the Environment a couple of years ago, and we had an individual from the World Bank give a presentation, a presentation at noon on, we thought it was going to be on solid waste, and we were going to just basically eat and check out downtown Anchorage. But she started her speech early, and it happened to be on farm waste. And it was very interesting to listen to this lady talk about the impact of farm waste on the environment. What was really amazing is she put a graph up or a PowerPoint up, and it showed like 1,400 diseases that the human body can contract at any time in our lives. And she, next to that, she took 800 of those diseases and said these diseases come directly from the meat that we eat. It was just really, really amazing. And I said to my friend after that, I wonder how many people will leave here becoming vegetarian. And her point was that, you know, the chicken farms in the South, they put arsenic in their chicken food. People don't know this. They put rat poison. They feed their chickens rat poison. When we got home, they had a special on TV about these chicken farms, and they tested the water that came out of some of these chicken farms, and it's the highest level of pure arsenic ever tested.
Wow.
What a correlation between, you know, the meat that we eat, the diseases that we get, and the effect it has on the environment.
It's amazing stuff. And what's exciting to me as I do the show, Native American Health Issues featured on American Indian Living, Brian, it's exciting when we see people in tribal leadership that are saying, this isn't just something I'm presenting. I'm not just talking about this because I'm running for president of NCAI, but this is something that I live. I've seen it make a difference for me, and I want to extend it to my people and to people throughout Indian country. Any other messages, kind of healing messages that you're trying to communicate in this venue?
Yes. An issue that is becoming an epidemic, that it's a health issue, suicide. Suicide is becoming an epidemic. Alaska is, you know, having tough times. Washington tribes are having tough times. Southeast, we are having an epidemic with our youth when it comes to suicide. When my father, who was 80 years old, still alive, when he was growing up, suicide wasn't even heard of. When he became a young adult, he could only remember one suicide, you know, for the first 40, 50 years of his life. And now, in the last 20, 25 years, we've just buried so many of our young children and kids that haven't been able to reach the age of 25 because of suicide. And so, you know, that's a health issue that, you know, that's, you know, a mental health issue that definitely needs to be brought to the forefront in Indian country. You know, if our next generation needs a lot of help when it comes to mental health. And, you know, physical health is important, but mental health also is a very key ingredient to a successful young person.
Any ideas as to things that can make a difference?
Well, I believe that communities need to look from within. They need to, you know, we definitely do need the professional help outside, but I think, you know, when Indian country has a problem, the best solution usually comes from within Indian country. And so, you know, if we could start getting maybe circles where we have elders or family members whose kids have committed suicide, and have monthly gatherings, get-togethers, where, you know, if we have children who are tried to commit suicide, our children who are thinking about it, to be able to go to these groups and talk with these people who are, you know, survivors of ones that did commit suicide, I think that would be a good start.
Tremendous, Brian. We've got to slip away. We're just about out of time in this segment. I've been talking with Brian Cladisby. He's with the Swinomish Indian Tribal Community. He's the tribal chair. He's running for NCAI president. And I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're not done with this show. We've got another segment coming up. We invite you to stay by. We will be right back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by Weimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Weimar is home to the Residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Weimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Weimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Of steel, with incomparable courage, with fierce determination, with uncompromising resolve. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces go forth. And wherever and whenever they go, the USO will be there to touch their spirit, to comfort them, to remind them, to simply and heartfully thank them for the extraordinary gift they give us all. Until every brow is soothed and every hand is held, until every battle's won and every song is sung, until everyone comes home. Find out more about the USO and how you can help at uso.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. We're in our final segment of today's show. We're broadcasting from the National Congress of American Indians. It's actually a pre-recorded show, as you know. It's 2013, October, and we've been talking with a number of leading people throughout Indian country. Across from me is Ed Dunn. Ed is Native Canadian. It's great to have you with us today.
It's great to be here, Dr. DeRose.
Ed, you now are Dr. Ed Dunn.
Yes.
The last time you were on the show, probably a year and a half ago, you didn't have that doctorate yet. I know you've been working hard, and especially in the area of Native health issues, right?
Right.
And am I correct in saying your doctoral work was in Native mental health?
Right, especially in suicide.
Well, we want to talk about that. Before we do, just as a point of reference, those of you that are regular listeners, you've heard Ed before. Ed is actually the producer and one of the hosts of the Native New Day series. Have I got the name of the series right?
Native New Health.
Native New Health. Okay, there's a Native New Day and a Native New Health.
Right.
So thanks for keeping me straight. And that's a DVD series that's still in progress. You know, a number of the DVDs are completed. I've seen some of them. They're very good. How many are out now?
Well, there are 8 out now. We filmed 2 more, number 9 and number 10. Mm-hmm. And they're on mental health and problem gambling.
Okay.
So they're being edited right now, so very soon they'll be out.
And if someone wants to get some of the previous issues, I think there's one on diabetes, right?
Right.
Was there?
There's actually 2 on diabetes.
Oh, 2 on diabetes. What are the other topics that are on the series?
There's diabetes, how to maintain your weight or help maintain a healthy weight, how to be free from smoking, how to be free from alcohol,
okay,
and how to have a healthy heart, mm-hmm, and understanding cancer. And then understanding suicide.
And these are all done from a Native perspective.
Right, right.
So if you're interested in that series, before we go into the interview, Ed, tell us how someone could get more information about the DVDs that are already out.
You can go to the website, www.nativenewhealth.ca. That's everything is there that you need.
Okay, nativenewhealth.ca, CA
right.
For Canada.
Right.
Okay, well, let's talk about the topic at hand. You've just finished your doctoral research looking at suicide, especially among indigenous peoples, right?
Right.
What did you learn?
Well, there were 3 things. The first one was alcohol is involved with about 95% of the suicides. But we knew that before.
When you say involved, does that mean someone was actively drinking when they took their life?
Mostly. But there are other ways that alcohol, like partying, you know, somebody else was drinking, there was a fight, all sorts of different ways, not just being intoxicated.
Okay. So alcohol, big component. So like you said, that's not new news, but it reinforced what we've been hearing.
Right. And it reinforced that we really need to do something about this. How can we as community members, you know, stand up against this type of thing when it is so prevalent and it measures so high in destroying our people?
Mm-hmm. Any recommendations from your vantage point?
Well, we as community people, we should have our town halls and just strategize on how we can minimize alcohol intake in our communities. Whether we want to have dry communities, whether we want to have somehow monitor, you know, how much the people take, how much we allow in. Somehow, though, we have to, for the health of our communities, we have to minimize the alcohol in our communities.
Okay. And I know you're leading by example because you and I have interface before, and in your personal case, you don't use any alcohol, right?
I don't use any alcohol, and I never have.
Well, let's go to the second point. What other thing emerged as a big factor?
The second point has to do with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed, it over and over again, it was reported to me that nobody cares. No, people wouldn't care if I died. And the only time, or almost the only time, when I hear people praising others is at a funeral.
Wow.
And it's too late for that person to hear. So the idea I kind of get is, do I have to kill myself in order to hear something good about myself? So that kind of thought goes through the minds of people. So is there some way that we could honor our young people in our communities? We could communicate to them that they are valuable to our community. We need them. Mm-hmm. And we can praise them for the achievements they make. So that whole thing about mental health. And, of course, we need to lobby for more money, for better funding of mental health services. Mm-hmm. We need intervention and people that are dealing with, say, sexual abuse as a child, dealing with rape, those kinds of things that affect people a long time in life. We need to have better services to help them.
Yeah. So basically, alcohol is a big factor. This whole issue of value and affirming people, another huge issue. But you said there was a third factor that was a significant contributor.
The third factor, and this is new to the scientific world, is that when people die, before people die, people have the idea that they're going to a better place.
Hmm.
A lot of our traditional values, our traditional beliefs say that, and it's reinforced by the Christian beliefs as well, that when you die, you're going to a better place, or at the funeral, the person that's presiding at the funeral will say, well, they're in heaven right now looking mm-hmm. down on us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we've all heard those words. But those words give the idea that, you know, if I'm in distress, stress, and I don't know how to deal with it, well, then I'll kill myself, and then I'll be in a better place. And then, so that's one.
Okay.
The other way is people have the idea that when they die, they're going to join their loved ones.
Mm.
So this whole idea of being reunited with their loved ones who have died. And so those two factors really measured high in people thinking that process through and carrying a lot of weight in their decision to commit suicide.
Now, I don't know if it's a fair question or not, Ed, so you just tell us. You and I had been speaking some before we actually sat down to do the recording here at NCAI. And we talked about this whole area of reinforcing these beliefs about going right to heaven when you die, going to a better world, or as you put it, among some Canadian tribes, you'd go to a warm place that had plenty of food, right? Isn't that how you expressed it? You've actually looked some at the Christian beliefs and what the Bible actually teaches, and you came to a different conclusion. Is it fair to ask you just for a glimpse of that? I know there are many listeners who don't come from Christian perspectives, but many do, and I think they may find it interesting what you've been looking at.
Well, the Bible tells us, and we can find it in the story of Jesus and Lazarus and his two sisters, Mary and Martha. Jesus said that Lazarus was asleep. Mm. And it was clear as you read the whole story that that Lazarus had actually died. And so the idea of when you die, you sleep. Mm. And as you read the whole Bible and the context, God is rewarding us for our response to Him, His Spirit, for the good that we're involved in life. Mm-hmm. So there's a good reward, there's a bad reward. But we sleep before we get that reward. Hmm.
So the idea that someone immediately goes to a better place and they're looking down and they're in a happy world, you're saying this is not what you see the Bible even teaching.
Right, right.
Well, that's a whole other discussion, but I think it's provocative because it relates to this topic of suicide in Indian country, doesn't it?
Right, and the idea is not so much to try to get people to change their beliefs, but take a good look at our beliefs about the afterlife. And many times when it comes to government programs, we're told not to talk about spiritual beliefs. Mm. But it's clear that we need to talk about spiritual beliefs, and we need to make life more rewarding now for people instead of some supposed reward later on. Hmm.
Tremendous. So there's a lot we can do, whether it's discouraging the use of alcohol as community members taking responsibility, whether it's helping people have value in the here and now, and not emphasizing so much that there's something better if you take your life.
Right, right.
Well, Ed, we've got to wind up, but give us one more time your website, because I know some of the things you've already done on DVD actually address alcoholism. You've got programs coming out about mental health. How do we get some of those resources?
www.nativenewhealth.ca.
Okay. Dr. Ed Dunn, thanks for joining us on today's edition of American Indian Living. Hopefully you've enjoyed this cross-section of guests from the National Congress of American Indians. Hopefully it's made a difference in your life and in your health. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.